Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Delegates at the Global Climate Conference got some bad news on carbon emissions. Here at home, the EPA is taking steps that could make it harder to regulate carbon and other pollutants too. 2 weeks ago, Administrator Scott Pruitt announced that scientists who get EPA research grants can no longer serve on the agency's scientific advisory committees. Here's Pruitt.
There's a story about Joshua leading the people of Israel. And Joshua says to the people of Israel, choose this day whom you're going to serve. And I would say to you, this is sort of like the Joshua principle, that as it relates to grants from this agency, you're going to have to choose either service on the committee or choose the grant. But you can't do both.
Now, there is no similar biblical standard at the EPA for advisors who get grants from outside sources, including industry. And that has researchers like Joe Arvai questioning Pruitt's motives here. Joe Arvai served as an EPA science advisor and got EPA research grants. His six-year advisor's term was not renewed by the agency this past September. Arvai is currently director of the Erb Institute for Global Sustainable Enterprises at the University of Michigan, and he joins me now. Joe, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So how do you see this decision from the administrator, Scott Pruitt, to bar scientists who get EPA grants from the Science Advisory Board?
I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I see it as quite disingenuous. I think he's coming at this from the perspective that certain scientists have a conflict of interest and therefore should be ruled out of serving in an independent science advisory capacity. But I think if you peel back just even the thinnest layers on top of that, you'll see that this has very little to do with conflict of interest and much more to do with his deregulatory agenda and how he wants to make it happen and how he wants to make it look legitimate.
All right, well, let's deal with the argument about conflict of interest first, because on the face of it, it seems like Scott Pruitt has a point. If you're a scientist who gets money from the EPA and you serve on a science advisory board, you might be conflicted, and the advice that you give the EPA could be colored by the fact that you want to preserve your big research grant, right?
You know, I've heard that argument made a couple of times. I think it's flawed for a couple of reasons. I think the first one is that the motivation to keep your research grant is really predicated upon the quality of the science that you end up doing and not what you end up saying with the science that you're doing. What I mean by that is that the data you collect ultimately speaks for itself. So the notion that somehow those scientists would receive a grant, would twist the data to satisfy the EPA just to hang on to grants seems somewhat silly. I'd add that researchers who are working with grants have to go through very stringent peer review processes, very stringent conflict of interest processes, both at their home institutions and at the EPA. And on top of that, it's not like they're taking that money home with them to, you know, pay their mortgage. They're using it to pay direct research costs. So, you know, the incentive that one might think would be there from looking at this from the outside, those incentives aren't actually there in real life.
One argument here is that this works the other way all the time. When people from industry have a conflict of interest, they have to do huge amounts of disclosure, but there are some advisory committees that they can't serve on because of conflict of interest that they might just be trying to serve their industry and not the data.
And I think this is actually a really good point. And I think it really sort of uncovers the hypocrisy of Pruitt's decision. So if you look at EPA Science Advisory Board members who may have received EPA grants in the past, I'll use myself as an example. I received a grant from the EPA it was 1999. And I think my share of that grant was about $100,000. That money was used to pay direct research expenses. It was used to pay participants in the research. It was used to pay for publishing costs and so forth. None of that money went into my pocket. And when you go through conflict of interest reviews at the EPA, so when I went through mine before joining the EPA Science Advisory Board back in 2011, I had to disclose where my grant money came from. I had to disclose what kinds of consulting agreements I had. I had to disclose what kinds of industry groups that I was working with. And there were some pretty basic rules. One was that if you were doing independent research where the grants were running through your institution, the University of Michigan in my case, those grants were reviewed by grant officers at the university and by grant officers at the EPA or another federal agency like the National Science Foundation. If you contrast that to what's happening with the EPA and some of its other advisors, I'll give you an example of Mike Honeycutt, who's now been named as the chair of the EPA's Independent Science Advisory Board. His agency received $48.5 million from the federal government last year, much of it from the EPA. So I would argue that there's much more conflict of interest tied up in Mike Honeycutt's service than there was in mine. So I hear what you're saying in terms of there's sort of this background incentive there for scientists to want to please the EPA in order to protect their research grants and ultimately perhaps protect their careers. I guess what I'm arguing is that processes for making sure that material conflicts of interest don't come into play when it comes to the advice those advisors are giving to the EPA or any other federal agency are stringent, have been in place for a very long time. And what you're seeing from Scott Pruitt now is a rather hypocritical suggestion that somehow he's got to change the rules now because they weren't working effectively in the past.
So, Joe, if you're not buying it, what do you think Scott Pruitt is up to? Why would he want to get all of these scientists like you who have EPA grants out of the way?
I think that there are a couple of reasons behind this. I think the first is that it looks good from the standpoint of the deregulatory agenda set forth by Donald Trump and Scott Pruitt, if you can really rattle the cages of those pesky liberal scientists that are standing in the way of regulation. So this all looks good from the standpoint of their base in terms of the election promises that Donald Trump made a year ago. So there's a real kind of political expediency and political imagery aspect to this. At the same time, I think there's a very real concern here that when it comes to some of the questions that Scott Pruitt wants to address from the standpoint of deregulation, perhaps the Clean Power Plan around climate change, he can now, through this set of decisions, basically begin to wipe the slate of EPA advisors clean, start to appoint people to the boards like Mike Honeycutt, like Bob Blands, people who are very friendly to his agenda, who can hide behind their scientific credentials and not get exposed to the same kinds of scrutiny about conflicts of interest as others. He can use their advice, which is obviously going to pander to his agenda, as a way to bolster his own claims that it's okay to roll back clean air regulations. It's okay to roll back regulations that would limit the amount of greenhouse gas emissions getting into the atmosphere. So I think there's a very real and dangerous element to what Scott Pruitt is doing. And I think ultimately it's going to be the health of Americans and the health of the American environment that suffers.
So you're suggesting then that some of this is as simple as clearing out some seats on the board using scientific conflict of interest and being able to fill those seats with your handpicked people.
That's absolutely right. And I think just by the decision he made a couple of weeks ago, he's been able to clear out a third of those science advisors. Next year, he'll have another opportunity to clear out another third of those science advisories. In year three, another third. And by that point, he'll have basically tilted the science advisory board in the direction of his agenda.
Joe Arvai, thanks for being with us again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Joe Arvai is a former member of the EPA Science Advisory Board. He's now director of the Erb Institute for Global Sustainable Enterprise at the University of Michigan.